94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. This is the Electric Drum. I'm Juan Castillo. And I have in the studio a young man who have been trying to get into the studio for a long time. But he's so busy traveling around the world and just doing some great things, especially here in our community. His name is Neville Wisdom. And he's a fashion designer. He has a studio here in New Haven on Orange Street, right?
We have two studios. We currently have one on Orange Street still, but our main store now is in Westville, 903 Whaley Avenue.
Okay.
And we are in the process of transferring over to 903. That's going to be our main store.
Okay, yeah. All right. And that's in the Westville section right there during the crossroads.
Yeah, Westville, right across the street from Bella's, a popular breakfast place.
Yeah, I got to stay away from there, man. There's too many calories.
Yeah, that place is good.
Yeah, it is. Neville Wisdom, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing really good.
All right. So now we're going to talk about your life today, also about your passion for clothes, and making people look good,
And feel good.
Yeah, no question. You're originally from Jamaica.
Yes.
And you came here when you were 27 years old.
Yes.
So tell me about growing up in Jamaica.
Growing up in Jamaica is different from what growing up Jamaica meant when I was growing up in Jamaica. Because, I used to often tell people that I grew up poor. I grew up from a poorer family, but now that I've gotten a lot older, I understand that I was one of the wealthiest kids growing up.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, it's crazy because, what one's exposed to, I think most people or most parents in their life would want their kids to have the adventures and the lifestyle that I would have. And you'd have to have some serious money to be able to kind of like create that environment that a kid like me can grow up in. It's a lot of rivers, swimming in the bushes, just running around, just being kids, just having fun, climbing trees, coconut trees, going out to forage for food, from an avocado to star apples to oranges, and hiding bananas in bushes so that they get ripe. I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, it's really a really nice childhood that I had. We did a lot of cave diving and fish spearing and catching shrimp and fish and just amazing.
That's not amazing. Poor. That's
what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
People pay for that, man.
Exactly. That people will pay a lot of money for it. I don't tell people I grew up poor anymore. I would say maybe I didn't have as much sneakers as the average American kid would have, or change of clothes. And that's kind of like that's what actually led me to being the creative that I am. When you don't have something in my childhood, the only way you were going to solve that is if you're going to be able to make it or create the atmosphere for it. Right. So that started design for me.
So early on, tell me about your family. Tell me about your family and how they're very important in your development.
Well, my family's big. It's 11 of us.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. And we lost two of my brothers before I came into the picture. My oldest brother, I think he's like 17 years older than me. But they started very high, they went to college and university and all of that stuff, and they're a very good scholar in school and they excel. I remember my oldest brother always had a car, in Jamaica, so my family has done very well for themselves, and I'm just really proud to be related to my sisters and brothers and their accomplishment. I have a sister who's a diplomat. I have St. Vincent's and the Grenadines, and she's in charge of education and theology, I think, if I'm getting that correct. And then my oldest sister that lives here, she's the nursing director for Yale New Haven Hospital.
Wow.
So, and my sister's a nurse manager in New York. My younger brother has his own auto mechanic shop in the Cayman Islands, owned his own building. You know, sort of interior designers, engineer, just keeps going, man.
So you had all this around you, so you had to do something.
Well, I'll let you in on a little secret. They were concerned about me for
a long time.
Yeah, for sure.
Right,
I was having a conversation with my sister about a couple weeks in Jamaica, and we were just sitting down and talking, and one of the things we talked about was how much I just always loved life, and you know, always believed in just living life to its fullest and not necessarily getting too caught up in the idea of living, but just being able to live. And you know, she expressed some words that, you know, there were definite concerns about it, but now it's different. They're like, look, you still did all you wanted to do, even though it seemed crazy at times, but you're still that same person, and we want to exemplify you now.
Nice.
as traveling and just experiencing different lives and just making, you know, I tell people all the time, this is one of the things that I always say to people, is that, you know, some people will say they can't afford to go on vacation, and I'm like, if I can't afford to pay my light or my gas or my heat or my car note or my mortgage, then I can't. Vacation is the same thing for me. It has to fall into like one of my bills,
right?
You know, and those are the things that are most important to me in my life, so they always have to have some precedence. Yeah, they have to coexist, else everything else is gonna fall apart.
So what about mom and dad?
So my mom is an amazing woman. I think she was the one who I took the trade from, you know. Okay. Sewing. She made clothes for us in the younger years, and
she had a singer
that a singer that I eventually became my singer.
Really?
And
awesome.
Yeah, and then I ended up using it quite some time. That was my go-to machine.
It still have it?
No.
Oh, you
no,
kidding?
No, because I left that in Jamaica. Yeah.
Classic now.
Yeah, man. Oh man. The things are classic,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, my grandmother had one too, you know.
Yeah,
She's from Jamaica.
Oh, cool.
You know, and so, you know, it seems like all Jamaicans always had a sewing machine in the house.
Right.
You know, yeah. So
when I talk about my mom, mom was like, she was an amazing human being in terms of what she was able to do for us with whatever little she had. And when I would refer to being poor growing up in Jamaica, it would sort of be around the idea of, I remember when we used to travel on the bus to school. For a long time, I just thought that the conductor was just missing me. He just didn't see me, or I was standing in a place where he didn't realize that he didn't collect money from me. But it's because my mother had already had a conversation about her money and her finances and where they would be or where they are. And so she had a conversation about him, about being able to pay him at a certain time. So when she saw me on the bus, he just walked right by me because he already worked it out with my mother.
Right.
And so, you know, little things like that my mother did that was like really amazing, that you don't really know about it until you get to a place where you find out and be like, you were doing that?
Yeah, right.
I just thought I was like cool kid. And
yeah. How about
that? My dad was is a contractor. He had a lot of, when he left for the States really early, so I haven't spent much time with my dad. He left the first time, like, for that I remember, was I was around 7 years old, and he moved back to the Cayman Islands, and then from the Cayman Islands he moved to the United States. And he was a legal immigrant here for a really, really long time, about 7 years. So I hadn't seen him for 7 years, and then prior to that, age 14, he came back and visited one time. But I think by that time, my dad had sort of like gotten used to the idea of living without us being around him. And he had started to forge a different lifestyle for himself, which wasn't very cool. But, you know, it's
it was what it was.
And yeah. I still love my dad. We often sit down and have conversations, and they usually have the same sort of meaning, but they don't necessarily come out the same way in both of our heads.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So
I'm Juan Castillo. I'm speaking with Neville Wisdom, this Electric Drum, and he's a designer here in the city, international designer. He has Neville Wisdom Fashion Design Studios here in New Haven. Has two locations, one in Westville and one in Orange, soon to be just the one in Westville. So let's talk about, what was the first time that you, obviously your mom, the first time that you got on that sewing machine and she said, let me show you.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So my mom, I wanted a shirt. I wanted a certain type of shirt that I was wearing that time. It was, it's like two colors. I can't remember exactly the fabric that they call it here. They have a different name for what we referred to. But it was a cotton fabric, very soft. And they were these really popular floral shirts that were being made out of this fabric. And I wanted my mother to make one of these shirts for me. And she was like, why don't you make it yourself? And I'm like, all right, cool. I'll do that. And so that's just kind of like how it started. She showed me how to drape a shirt, which at the time I thought was kind of crazy that she didn't know what she was doing and there had to be like an easier way to make a shirt. And now 30, 40 years later, I'm doing the same thing. It's the thing that I love to do the most is to drape.
Awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So when did you discover that you had a skill for this, that you had a love for it?
I think right off of that. Once she started showing me to make little stuff here and there, it just became a part of me. I'm always attracted to creating stuff, you know, making something new, something different. But clothing was the one that stuck with me because it embodied a personality, and it was a lot deeper than it seemed to be in the beginning, and still is. You know, a lot of people view clothing as being something very surface, but you have to meet one of the women who wear one of my dresses and how they feel wearing one of my dresses, and you know it means much more than just surface.
Yeah, and I think on the most part, the African American history in this country is rooted very much into clothing.
Yes,
I mean almost every era,
right?
We have embraced a certain style, a certain way of wearing it.
Right.
And a certain attitude while wearing it. And so, on the most part, it is very important to us. I mean, we've been criticized for years about we spend more money on clothes than we do investing.
Right.
For ourselves, right? But that's because it's important.
Right.
Right? But even more important, you mentioned, you know, it's your person, you know, your personality in the clothes, right?
Right.
You know, and the clothes, obviously, as a designer, when you're creating something for someone, you know, you're taking that into consideration.
Right.
You know, not only the type of clothes that they like, but also, does this fit who you are?
Right. Well, that is actually, you learn to do that in the long run. As a designer, most designers just want to make whatever they feel like they want to make. You know, as a designer, that is sort of like an inborn concept in your head that you just want to create something, whether it's practical or it's going to be used in many times over, or it's going to help some people or it's not going to help some people. I don't think you truly want to think about that as a designer. You just want to create. And so that comes along the line, because then if your designing becomes a lifestyle, and a lifestyle is the way you earn and live, And so you have to curve that appetite and try to be a little bit more thoughtful when you're designing. But if as
far, I want to, yeah, this, this is what I want, Neville. This is what I want.
I'm just keeping it real. I'm like,
yeah. This is what I want.
Yeah,
I don't, but you're like, yo, listen. This is what I got in my mind, right?
Yeah.
You know, so that's deep. That's deep. Juan Castillo, speaking with Neville Wisdom, man, designer here in the city. Talking about clothes, man. Talking about, you know, designing. Talking about life. So you came here when you were 27.
Yeah.
Tell me about that journey. You got here. Culture shock, right?
Big culture shock. Because for the last part of my the 10 years prior to coming to the States, I had a company in Jamaica called Neville's Fashion.
Okay.
And it was a small company who made custom-made clothes for women and men. And that company had gotten vandalized just about like a year or a couple years before I actually came to the States. So I was going over to one of my friends' place where I used to use his equipment and stuff like that. But I was living in Kingston, and Kingston is actually very trendy in terms of fashion and lifestyle. And I expected that to be exemplified or just be to the 100 power when I came to the US. I mean, I felt like there was going to be a really nice club around the corner.
There's gold in them streets.
I mean, just little things, you know. Like, one of the biggest culture shock for me was I used to, my last 10 years in Kingston, as a guy, you would go to a male spa, sort of like a male salon.
Right.
And you would get your ear washed after you get your hair cut, and when you get your beard shaved, you would, the girls would tweeze your face, mm-hmm. and they would pick out ingrown ears, and they would rub ointments on it to treat it and stuff like that. And
right.
And you could get a manicure and a pedicure there, and that had become something that I was very used to. That was right. a part of my lifestyle at the time, and I thought that was going to be something that was at every corner in the States when I got here. Just little weird things, you know.
Oh,
like
I hear that.
The little the buildings and the structure of the buildings and the houses. And
right.
One of the things that too was really a culture shock for me was when people talk about the ghettos of the United States, and I'm like, yo, they haven't seen no ghetto. What are they talking about? These are like right. houses with elevators, some of them.
Yeah, right.
Air conditioned, what? Talk about the Ville.
Yeah, right.
Let me show you some shacks.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of things, you know.
Right.
At the time when I came here, my brother-in-law, my dad, I lived with my dad for a little bit, and he had his new wife, which was my mom, which wasn't my mom, her son living with us. And it was weird because, you know, he was there living with my parents, and I remember my dad always being, you know, staying on me about like doing stuff or getting stuff done or do something with my life. And, you know, it was kind of weird to come and find a kid that just kind of like lay around and watch TV and play video games living in his household,
right.
While he got up every day and went to work. And for the short time that I spent with him, every day I was out in the streets with him. So yeah, it was a big culture shock on many, many
right.
levels.
Right, right.
Some things you just don't expect. You don't expect people to be driving here without registration or insurance on the car. You just don't think that way because right. you weren't doing that in Jamaica.
Right.
Everything is so much better in the States. And
yeah.
Yeah, but it's the same.
I get it.
It's the same.
I get it. Yeah, I came in when I was 10 yeah. from Panama, so I get it.
Yeah.
So How did you
end up fashion? That was the biggest one.
Talk about that.
Yeah, so when I came, I always envisioned coming to the U.S. and pursuing my career, my dream, or my passion to create clothing. I thought that America was going to be the place where all of that was going to happen. You know, like, I thought there was going to be factories and fabric store. I just thought that everything that I would have needed would be in America to create this. But sadly, it definitely wasn't as readily available as it was in Jamaica.
Wow. Okay.
In terms of like skill level, there wasn't much, there's not much individuals that grew up in America that have a skill base for making clothing. And there's not a fabric store around each corner that you can run into and grab some fabric and go find a tailor or a dressmaker or a pattern maker or someone to help you with it. So I remember the first time I was in New York City and my sister kind of like gave me directions and she said, well, go down to 42nd Street and that's the fashion capital of the world and you'll, see what you find. And, it was very disappointing for me because it was almost like it wasn't readily available. There were stores.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I grew up in New York, so, and I was into, having my clothes made, I was in that era,
right.
In the 70s and 80s where, right. You had to have your stuff tailored, no matter how much money you made, you had to have it tailored. And, we used to go to Bushwick,
right.
because that's where all the Jewish, tailors were,
right.
As well as, they had the fabric stores. We used to go on Delancey Street because
right.
That's where you went to get fabric.
I heard a lot
about
stuff like that, yeah.
You pick out your fabric for your pants and,
yeah.
Shirts and, But, because people always say, we need to go on 7th Avenue, right?
Yeah.
It's like, no, man. That's not where you got to go.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What I mean? So you decide to come to New Haven, right?
Yeah.
Tell me about how that happened, considering that, most people would think, you got to stay in New York
right.
in order for you to become famous and
right.
you to get the clientele and all of that, right?
Yeah.
So
and staying in New York, it just didn't happen. It's not something that I purposely moved against. I came to visit my sister who lives in Connecticut, and she, I think, 4th of July celebration, and she was talking to me about like what is it that I wanted to do, and I was like, right now I'm just trying to take care of myself and take care of my son. At the time I had a son who was just over a year old. He's 19 now, going to Southern.
That's great.
Yeah, we still live together, and so I single parented him for all of his life, and but at that point he was still in Jamaica because I had just left and came here without him, and so that's what I was talking to her about. I want to find work so I could get my son here or take care of my son, and she was like, well, we have a space in the basement if you want. You could probably try to stay there and see if you could find some work here. And I was like, okay, that sounds good. Yeah, I'll try that out. And about a few months after, I was able to land a job at Yale in Central Sterile Supplies.
Okay.
And it was cleaning instruments from surgery and stuff like that. And
right.
Putting case carts together and kits together with all of the instrumentation and stuff. It was fun. And I did that for about 5 months, and then the first opening they had for Surgical Tech at Eli Whitney at the time, I enrolled and started that course, and within a year I was able to become a Surgical Tech and double the salary I started it. within a year.
All the while you're still sewing, right?
All the while, still dibble-dabbling. Sewing never left me. You know, my first house was filled with sewing machines. That's one of the first things I bought when I got my first apartment. My entire life has always been with me moving sewing machines. I don't want to move them anymore, but I'm going to move them for the rest of my life. I know that's not going to go away.
Right. So working at the hospital.
Yeah.
And then what do you decide? Okay, this is what I was born to do. Right. Yeah. And I did this thing for 9 to 5 to take care of my child.
Right.
The whole nine. Right. So I got to do something for me.
Right. So the hospital was very interesting, and I met a lot of really interesting people who some of them are still really good friends of mine. And I used to make some little garments for people here and there in the hospital. But there's always sort of like a burning sensation of me wanting to do what I like to do. And for me, designing is more of a lifestyle than it is just a passion. It's everything. It's how I live. It's and me being an entrepreneur, businessman, and being able to sort of depict my hours or how I work or who I work with or the community that I embrace when I work. You know, I had much more self-control in terms of me following my passion than just making money, you know. So it was only a matter of time that I could suppress that before it exploded, and it was about to explode. And the incident that brought it together was I sort of set myself up for failure, which isn't really failure, but failed so I could move in the right direction.
Right.
So I've been having like little shops, you know. I bought some machines. I remember down on Church Street, I had like a little shop. I had brought one of my friends from Jamaica came here, who we talked a lot about designing our own clothing and making our own stuff. And we had met up with another popular kid that was in New Haven called Roderick, and he was into designs as well. And so I had a little studio on Church Street right here now that they're turning into apartments. And for many years I had sewing machines in there doing stuff. And then just before I decided that this was enough and this was how I was gonna live, I opened up a little shop up in Westville, just all by myself, just me, a couple sewing machines and some clothing, some fabrics and stuff. And within 2 weeks, I quit the hospital.
Wow.
Yeah. And I don't even know if I thought about it. There was just no, I remember thinking that I came to the States with $40 that this lady gave to me, who was a friend of my dad and a friend of my family. And I was thinking that how much worse than that could it be? After being in the States and knowing as much as I know, knowing all the people that I know, there had to be some way that I could make a living out of this. And the sacrifice was more so on the material things that I had acquired. That was the big kind of like stopping agent, the thing, the force that was trying to confuse me and make me think that I was living the life that I wanted to live.
You need another big screen TV.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, you know. And so I faced it, and I, you know, some people talk about hitting rock bottom.
Yeah.
Rock bottom for me was amazing. I mean, it was an amazing time in my life because, like, I got to a stage where I sort of almost could see the light at the end of the tunnel, because I could identify all the things that were keeping me from me being me. And you know, some people who knew me at the time said I was smoking too much marijuana. And it was in my mind. But, you know, it's hard. It's hard for people to, you know, understand individuals. I try not to judge people's personality, no matter the situation that they're in. I try to understand who they are and where they're coming from, and try to work around that and not try to force them into believing that my beliefs are better than theirs. I needed that. So I sort of set myself up to get this like little thing going. And as soon as I was in there playing with fabric and sewing machine, I just didn't want to do anything else anymore.
That's fantastic. Yeah. That's hence, you set yourself up to fail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's, absolutely. Yeah. So, okay. Let's talk about your business then.
Yeah.
And clothes and fashion. So, how do you operate? I mean, we talked a little bit about this earlier, right? So, do you sort of sit back and say, I'm going to create this and provide it for someone that comes that might like it, or do you, or both, or do you go to someone comes to you and says, listen, this is what I got in mind, right?
Right.
Talk about that.
So. Because of the years of experience, now that has changed dramatically. And like in the beginning, this, like I talked about earlier, design was just about what I wanted to create. But over the years, I've learned that I actually want to create clothes that people can wear and feel good about themselves. And that has sort of taken the new form of what we do at Neville Fashion Design Studio. There is still definitely that, you know, sort of like selfishness within the design of me. My designs are usually created on sort of like a basis from what I used to see, like that's trapped in my mind. Inspirations, people call it. I watched a lot of movies, on black and white movies back then, because that's all you were exposed to, that's all was available.
Right.
And so a lot of that older sophistication became a part of me, but there was always that free kid running around in the bushes and just enjoying himself, and somehow they have taken on a unity and it's often embraced in the clothes that I design.
Let's talk about fabric, right?
Oh, fabric, yes.
Let's talk about fabric.
my favorite.
You know, got to be comfortable, right?
Got to be comfortable.
And so I know for me, you know, it's got to feel good on my skin.
Yes.
Right? Tell me about that. And what goes into that?
So we've been, we are one of those companies that most, if we went to like a financial advisor, they would tell us that we're doing everything wrong. Because we have a lot of feelings in what we do. And it's sometimes that interferes with mathematics in terms of like making money.
Right.
You know? And for us, fabric is the most important part of our of my designs, and it has to feel good. You know, we will not buy fabric just because it's a cheap price and it looks okay. You know, it's really, it has to feel good on your body. You know, you have to be comfortable when you wear it, and you know, it's comfort over style for us, definitely. You know, it's just not about style and being uncomfortable. So fabric is very, very important. So and there's a lot of other things that are important to me too, as well as like environment and other businesses, and being able to use beautiful fabrics that might have been created for some other purposes but are still around. And so we like to travel to these boutiques that are the stores, the fabric stores that still coexist in the city. We have a couple of them that we frequently visit, and we buy some things locally now from Discount Fabric. You know, it just this morning Lauren went in there and picked up about 6 yards of 4-ply silk, which is gorgeous fabric, and reasonable price too, for us to be able to bring reasonable prices to the customers who are buying this stuff. So it's more of a unity for us now. We're not trying to create fabric at this point in our life, because we feel as if though there's an overflow of fabric still waiting, you know, calling and saying, make me something right. Make me into something. So right, you know, that's kind of like where our business is now. I'm sure in the future probably might have a different outlook, where some things might be done differently, but for the most part we totally want to minimize waste. And in the industry of clothing, there is a lot that's going on that people aren't aware of, and clothes is something that you wear every day.
Yeah. Juan Castillo speaking with Neville Wisdom. He's a fashion designer here in New Haven. He has a studio on Orange and one in Westville, and we're talking about his life and talking about fashion and clothes. And question, in terms of men and women, do you do tailoring too?
Yeah, so we have a part of the company that specifically caters to just like fixing stuff for people. We call it it's like a customized service that we have. Right. And we actually have many different sides to the business that are fashion that we've incorporated so that we can be more of a force, so that we don't necessarily have to be follow the status quo of the fashion industry in terms of how things are done or how it's expected, you know, to go or all things. So we have we make our own clothing in house. Everything is designed and made in our shop. We have a couple of people who help us with sewing the pieces together. From time to time that number changes depending on the demand of stuff that we have. I very often will jump into production, or if it needs to, or I will I'm mostly creating the new samples. I like to physically play with the fabric myself and communicate and see what we bring out of it.
Cost. I found out very quickly when I lived in New York and I started with the, you know, having my clothes made.
Right.
And I realized that, you know, I was going to buy from the rack, and, you know, and it wasn't fitting exactly like I wanted it. So I had to take it to get it altered and whatever,
right.
You know, and by the time I finished all of that, I could have had my pants made.
Right.
Right. You know, so I guess it's a misconception, right, about the fact that, you
custom,
know,
right. There's definitely a misconception. People view or think for many, especially the African American community, think that my clothing is expensive, and it when you think about it, it can't be, you know, it's not, you know, because like, but it has to be more expensive than something you have no knowledge of
exactly
how much it costs to make right. you know right. One of the poisons that that's dominant in U.S. Culture right now is the idea of making people think. It's almost sort of like a disguise and a brainwash to get them to sort of like move away from what they should be doing and what and what what they shouldn't be. And fast fashion is one of those things that are like really destroying people, because, you know, you can go out and shop every weekend and buy a bunch of cheap things, and somehow it gives you that gratification that you are wealthy within yourself. You know, because you're doing well, you know, right, you could go out and get fly, you know.
Right.
You know, but things fall apart and people are suffering in various parts of the world who are putting these things together. And so, you know, we're not a part of that.
Yes.
You know, we our clothes is made right here in this community, and the individual who sits in that shop and makes that clothing does not get $2.50 a month.
They're making a living wage.
Yeah, they're making a living wage, and it's the same kind of living wage that you, the individual who wants to buy this garment, would want to be, you know. So it's like a fairness.
And then you get the quality.
I would buy it from a guy who lives around, who's around the corner, who's in my community, I know I can go back and say, "Yo, man, this seam fell apart."
Right.
Like, you gotta fix this.
Right.
So not that that happens, but just in case, you know, it's like guaranteed, warranted clothing. Yeah, that's what we make.
No question.
Yeah.
So, where do you go from here, man?
Oh man. So, you know, there's a lot of big ideas. You know, I'm a big idea kid. Still trapped inside of me, running around, jumping off cliffs into waters that are definitely not deep enough to be 100% safe in, but just being able to learn how to turn fast enough so you don't hit the bottom. And I think that is an example of my life and where it will continue to go. One of the things I'll share with you is that many people talk about their dreams, you know, what their dream is, and I've come to realize that there is a dream beyond the dream, and so I'm dreaming for that dream that's gonna be beyond the dream at all times.
Plus, you live in the dream.
Oh, the living dream is past, right? If that was where I stopped, then it wouldn't be any fun at all.
Yeah, it's not a dream anymore, right?
Yeah, the dream is a reality. Kind of like keep going wherever life journey takes me. There's this time on earth is not guaranteed to any of us, and I truly want to bless the community that I'm in, and I frequently go to the restaurant. I mean, like, I support so many businesses in New Haven in terms of, like, if I have to buy a pair of shoes or a pair of socks or food to eat, or, like, you know, I don't go outside of my community too much.
Right. And that's so important.
Yeah.
Before you leave, what's the best advice you ever gotten from who?
Now, that is probably one of the toughest questions that someone has asked me. But I would say that, you know, it didn't come from the source that probably most people think it would come from. But then again, a lot of people probably would have been inspired by music and musicians. And I think one of the most daring things that I have heard that made me think about a lot of the things that I do in my life was one of the verses from Bob Marley's song that says, emancipate yourself from mental slavery. I think that is definitely something that's always kind of spoken to me from on a broad perspective, because that could mean just about anything in your life.
And entrepreneurship.
Yeah. Definitely.
That's right.
Definitely. Definitely.
Never wish them. Brother, I want to thank you so much for coming.
I want to thank you too.
I mean, you know, you're so inspiring. Though I've been inspired, the community has been inspired. And again, tell us the address of your location.
So 903 Whaley Avenue is our main store. It's sort of in a transition. We've had both of the stores for about 3 years now. But time is really important to me, and we've been doing appointments on Orange Street for a year now. Okay. And most of our business has transitioned to 903 Whaley Avenue, so we've decided that we just want to be in one place and minimize the running around and going back and forth, because it's not that far. So our main location, if you Google or try to find us through Orange Street, it's still gonna link you back right to 903. We took care of all of that.
And what number do they reach you? Is there a number?
There's 8-203-891-6691. That's our main number. And well, it's nevillewisdom.com, and the email address is neville.wisdom@gmail.com.
So the next event that you see me at, I will be wearing one of Neville's designs, because I will be going.
All right.
I will be doing the whole thing.
All right. Walking the runway.
Everything. And congratulations on your last fashion show. I heard it was fantastic.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
I was hoping to get there, but I saw the pictures. And yeah.
It keeps growing. Eventually, everybody gets, some people get time to come these times, some other times right. people get yeah, to come. But we intend to keep doing things in the community. So
Thanks for that. And please come back.
Yeah, definitely. Right. I'd love to come back.
Juan Castillo with you. This is the Electric Drum right here on the Rhythm of the City, 94.3 WYBC.